There is no science proving any particular food can burn, melt, or flush away any fat. I'm John Tesh with today's Intelligence for Your Life Minute.
WRJN AccuWeather forecast. During the night, we had some heavy rain. There was some hail coming out of thunderstorms. At the same time, there was sleet because of a layer of chilly air closer to the ground. And we'll have some more showers and thunderstorms this morning. Temperatures not far from 39 for the high. And then turning colder this afternoon, and the rain can change over to snow and accumulate 1 to 3 inches tonight. It's going to be much colder than it's been, low 24. Then tomorrow, a snow flurry in the morning, otherwise a dry day, high 30. Then another warm-up, cloudy on Sunday, high 42. And then for Monday and Tuesday, back to the 40s, maybe even the 50s, before it turns cold again. For AccuWeather, I'm meteorologist Elliot Abrams on your radio friend, WRJN.
Good times in southeast Wisconsin right now. In Kenosha, light rain falling, 36 degrees. At the municipal airport in Burlington, it is 32 and cloudy. Light rain at Milwaukee's Mitchell International Airport in 35. And at Magnum.media, international headquarters in Racine, similar conditions, 36 degrees, foggy, and I got a cough. The crud is trying to return. 34 dew point, 92% relative humidity, and the wind is out of the northeast at 18, gusting up to 28. The barometric pressure is at 29.54. I'm going to gather myself at 11 minutes after 10 o'clock, and then Milt Thompson, our man that wrote the book on The Only One in the Room, he just might have to take over. Stay tuned. Maybe it's my imminent death that Tom Karkel will be reporting on. Rolling Stones, Friday morning. I may just make it. Watch it! Como va, Carlos Santana on your radio, friend. It's 18 minutes, coming up to 19 minutes, as it usually does at 18 minutes after an hour, for 10 o'clock on your radio, friends. Thank God it's Friday morning. Glenn Klein with Milt Thompson. Well, I survived another segment. I thought I might buy the farm right there. I was making fun with Senator Bob Wirch because he had a little coughing fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him if he was okay, although it would be good radio. If he croaked.
Oh,
Tom Karkel could have an immediate breaking story. We could have the scoop on that. And then he asked if Carco would call 911. I said, oh, Carco will cover the story, and I'll call 911. And then here I have a coughing fit.
I love Bob Wirt, so.
Was that the Lord punishing me?
No comment.
It's a yes or no question. He is Bill Thompson, the pastor, the local civil rights leader, and the author of the great book, A Lifetime of Observations on Race, the only one in the room, it's called. And once again, you are the only one in the room.
It's par for the course.
Black History Month winding down. Why is Black History Month important to have?
Because unfortunately, we live in a country and a society where if you don't emphasize the significant contribution of various racial and ethnic groups, they'll fade into the background.
Well, we don't have Jewish History Month. We don't have Asian History Month. We don't have Native American History Month. We do have Hispanic.
Right.
Appreciation Month, I think it is called. Something like that. I don't think they call it History Month.
We appreciate Hispanics, but we...
I don't think we focus on the history.
But here's the solution.
Wait. Why don't we have these other groups, and yet we have Black History and Hispanic Months?
That's a great question.
That's why I get the big bucks.
Yep, that's a great question. And as I was about to say, I think that the solution is recognize and incorporate the contributions of everyone who helped to make this country what it is. On a daily basis, if you're in a school teaching history, incorporate all the accomplishments. When you're talking about scientific inventions, talk about the inventions of the Aztecs and of Hispanic people and of African American people and of Jewish people and others within the context of what you're covering so that it doesn't look somewhat generic. And maybe by doing that, you'd actually mention accomplishments that are not the run-of-the-mill ones. Because whenever there's Black History Month, it's the same 10, 15 people that are trotted out instead of people who invented very, very interesting things that are out of the mainstream that kids won't learn about.
We had Daryl Ingram here yesterday, who's former Green Bay Packer. He's a local business guy, good guy. And he made a very strong case for Black History Month, mentioned an African-American who invented the electric stoplight. And so many things that we take for granted in our everyday life were invented by African-Americans.
Yes.
But oftentimes, when they incorporate... And, of course, the liberal slanted education system is more and more doing things like this, incorporating African-American and Hispanic and Native history.
Mm-hmm.
They remove the history, the other parts of the history of the country, and this torques off the traditional white community.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we have, as Rodney King once said, why can't we just all get along?
Yeah. See, to me, it's not a zero-sum game where... You have to, it's not Robin Hood. You don't have to take from the whites to give to the blacks and the Hispanics. I think.
But some people think you do.
Yeah, but you don't.
And some people think that whites deserve it because of the past sins of our forefathers.
No.
No, you don't?
No, I don't.
But you're for reparations?
I am. I am for reparations, but I'm not trying to stick it to the white man. I'm for reparations because I think that there's a legitimate argument that the impact of repressive discrimination held back the progress of a group of people significantly enough that some of them would not be in cyclical poverty if their ancestors had been given opportunities.
That may
to progress.
Be true, but my late father-in-law, Ron Olson, who was a good Democrat in southern Wisconsin, in Edgerton, they still have the Olson Grain Farm there on Highway 51. My mother-in-law, my ex-mother-in-law, runs it, Maryland. My father-in-law, Ronnie Olson, said that if you took all the money in the world and you divvied it up exactly apportionately to the population, that within 10 years, all the money would be back where it started from.
No, that's true.
You agree with that?
Well, then
why do reparations?
I agree with his premise because it's an argument I've used against socialism and redistribution of wealth myself. But why reparations? Because A, it would be the right thing to do. It would be the right thing to do.
So was the war on poverty the right thing to do? Was Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty, all these federal programs, all this socialism, these safety nets, the welfare, the food stamps, all this stuff, trillions upon trillions of dollars, and basically poverty in the African-American community by percentage has not improved at all. One could make the case, I think, therefore, that it actually hurt the African-American community because a certain segment of the population, and not, of course, just African-Americans, but Caucasians, Hispanics, get dependent. And once you get into that cyclical mindset of dependency, it's hard to get out of it.
No, that's true. That's true. I wouldn't go as far. See, I will give Lyndon Baines Johnson and the liberals, you know, back in the 60s, I will give them their due for having the purest of motives. I don't think that they were trying to do a paternalistic thing that would keep blacks on the plantation, as it were. I think that they had the purest of motives. If I could hop in a time machine and go back and talk with them about what would have been more effective, jobs programs, job training programs, things that would have contributed.
I don't think they had the purest of motives. I really don't. I think obviously Martin Luther King Jr. and John Lewis and people like that certainly did.
So you don't think Bobby Kennedy, or because you'd have to look at people like that?
I'm going to just ask you a question. I'll answer my own comment with a question for you, Milt Thompson. Okay. Do you think today's Democrats who have sanctuary cities, who want to allow pretty much anybody in the country, primarily from Hispanic cultures and countries, do you think that they have pure motives?
No.
Why are they doing that? They're trying for another black voting bloc.
Yeah.
So that they can co-opt another ethnic group in this country.
True.
I think that's what LBJ was. I'm not saying that it wasn't beneficial, but I think that, and if you watch the movie all the way with LBJ, you'll see this, that they were they realized that if they reached out in such a powerful way to the African-American community. Remember, up until that point, because of the Dixiecrats, most African-Americans were Republicans if they voted.
Right back to the days of Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until FDR that it started shifting, and then LBJ just, you know, cemented it for perhaps forever. I mean, you would think that the leadership in the African-American community, I know you think this way because you're a Republican, for God's sakes, but that the prominent people, the Jesse Jacksons and the Al Sharptons and the people that speak, the Keith Ellisons, of course, he's a Democrat, but you would think that they would reach out to Republicans, because if you're voting 90% plus of the time for one party, they're going to take you for granted.
Oh, definitely.
And that's exactly what's happened for our African-American community.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's face it. When Democrats run for national elections, they figure out they go to the actuary and they figure out how many African-Americans there are that vote.
And I think this is why Hillary lost the election, because she took the African-American vote that had come out in such enormous numbers for President Obama for granted. And in cities like Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and Detroit and Milwaukee, mm-hmm, and Cleveland, they didn't come out in as big a numbers. And that was the difference between – and then, of course, the districts that were the white working class had voted for Obama, they switched to Trump, and now we have President Donald J. Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Yee. Not a big fan. I wouldn't want Hillary either.
I've listened to you on the radio.
Yeah, it's just – I mean, he's just an embarrassment. He's an absolute embarrassment.
As I told you before we got on the air, my stance now is more pastoral when it comes to politics, and it's
But that's boring radio, Pastor.
Yeah, it is.
But I gotta ask you a question.
I'm gonna pray. I'm gonna pray for him. I'm gonna pray for Scott Walker. I'm gonna pray for Bob Wirch and
haven't you always prayed for him?
Not as fervently as I've been praying for them lately.
Wow, there's a little repentance from Pastor Thompson.
Yeah.
All right. So I gotta ask you a question before we go to the news, because Tom Carco is awaiting us patiently. I posted something on Facebook. And I got defriended by somebody who is a biracial person who I've been friends with a long time. It said a brief history of presidents in the U.S. And it had 43 saltine crackers. Then it had an Oreo and a Cheeto.
Oh, my goodness.
So, of course, the white crackers representing the presidents through President George W. Bush were all white guys, then an Oreo, and then a Cheeto representing the current. I thought that was hilarious.
You would.
Was that racist?
I don't know if it was racist, but apparently for that one person, it was offensive.
Do you find it offensive?
No, because I guess I'm not hypersensitive, and I would find irony in the fact that you chose for the white presidents crackers.
Right, of course.
Since my parents were from the South and cracker was a derogatory
term
for whites.
I thought it was hilarious. I think we just all got to take a chill pill, for God's sake.
At times, that's true.
W260CV Racine is 99.9 FM.
Tom Carco is right around the corner after we learn what John Tesh has in store for us later on this evening on WRJN.
I'm John Tesh. On the next Intelligence for Your Life, is your home obesogenic, as in causing obesity? It could be if your snacks and treats are in the wrong place. Don't miss the latest data from our friend Dr. Brian Wansing from Cornell University on how you can set up your home, your apartment.
During the night, we had some heavy rain. There was some hail coming out of thunderstorms. At the same time, there was sleet because of a layer of chilly air closer to the ground. And we'll have some more showers and thunderstorms this morning. Temperatures not far from 39 for the high. And then turning colder this afternoon, and the rain can change over to snow and accumulate 1 to 3 inches tonight. It's going to be much colder than it's been, low 24. Then tomorrow, a snow flurry in the morning, otherwise a dry day, high 30. Then another warm-up, cloudy on Sunday, high 42. And then for Monday and Tuesday, back to the 40s, maybe even the 50s, before it turns cold again. For AccuWeather, I'm meteorologist Elliot Abrams on your radio friend, WRJN.
Thank you, EA. How was it when you came in, Milt?
Drizzly.
Crummy.
Yeah.
It's what it is. It's just crummy everywhere. 36 degrees Kenosha, 31 but Burlington, 35 Milwaukee, 36 at Racine, WRJN. I'm over it. I mean, it was just such a tease, the nice weather. But I'm going back to the warmer climes next week. Next Friday, we'll not be here.
Oh, okay.
Going to Savannah, Georgia, and Tampa. Tampa, Savannah, back to Tampa, back here.
Oh, that'll be nice.
My oldest daughter is filming a sitcom. The director of the sitcom saw her in another performance and wrote a part for her in the sitcom.
Oh, that's good.
Hannah Joy, Olson Klein Chiclana. My daughter's in a biracial marriage.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. She's white girl. Fair as skin, the fairest of 10,000, the bright and morning star.
Oh, okay.
If you will.
Yes, okay.
Blonde hair, blue-eyed, white girl. Her husband, Angel Gabriel Chiclana, dark-skinned Puerto Rican boy, great-looking kid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wouldn't be offended if their kids were represented by an Oreo cookie.
See. You keep trying to rationalize that.
I didn't come up with the meme. I just shared it. I thought it was funny. We're so sensitive.
Yep, we are on everything.
Either things are funny or they're not. That was funny.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, things have changed. I was talking with my oldest son, and I was talking about a movie that he and I watched together when he was younger, Blazing Saddles. And I love Blazing Saddles.
Great
movie.
N-word,
yeah, the N-word doesn't offend me, given the context that they're making fun of racist in it. But it offends him now. And so I've had to recalibrate my sense of humor to take into account the fact that people today, you know, Generation Xers and the others, may not find the same kind of humor.
That was a great movie, though.
It was.
Blazing Saddles. Alex Karras.
Right.
Punched out a horse.
Mel Brooks, of course.
Mel Brooks. And, Madeline Kahn.
Yeah, she was wonderful.
She goes into the dark.
Gene Wilder.
Cleavon Little.
Yeah, it was a great...
Remember that scene with Madeline Kahn?
Yeah.
And Cleavon Little?
Yeah.
They go into the sheriff's office, and she unzips, and well, you remember what her line is?
No.
It's two. It's two.
W251 VU Kenosha is 98.1 FM.
We're having fun at the old radio station today. It's 20 minutes until 11 o'clock. It is, thank God, it's Friday morning. Time for sports before we return with Milt Thompson on the other side.
A humorous and heartfelt comedy, That Darn Plot, opens at the Racine Theater Guild tonight. Mark W. Transom is one of the world's greatest playwrights and must create a new play in one night.
Visit Sprint.com/unlimited or call 1-800-SPRINT-1 today.
After 3/31, $18.60 for line 1, $40 line 2, and $30 lines 3 through 4 per month. Coverage and offer not everywhere. Excludes taxes, surcharges, roaming, and premium content. Streams video at HD 1080p. Music up to 1.5 megabits per second and gaming up to 8 megabits per second. Credit $30 activation fee. Prohibited network use rules. Data deprioritization and restrictions apply.
Want to give your mind a thrill ride? Fasten your metal seatbelt, then gently turn up your radio from 9 till 2. Glenn Klein will be on WRJN. And chances are, your life will never be the same.
Hairball's gone.
Have to get rid of our radio station cat. It's 10 minutes until 11 o'clock Friday morning. Glenn Klein, Milt Thompson, community conversation on race, which is our want, not just on Black History Month, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We are actually doing what they say we should be doing, whoever they are.
Right.
We're actually talking about it, not freaked out about it.
No.
Sometimes even laughing about it.
Right.
It's a pretty healthy thing.
Well, it's a complex subject, so, you know, it elicits a lot of different kinds of emotions and feelings, and it shouldn't. People should feel comfortable about that, and the reason why it's not talked about more is people are intimidated by the subject, people are oversensitive at times on the subject.
They're paranoid.
You've got people out there who, and you've got people that are indifferent to the subject. They can't figure out why Black people are all worked up.
And there's still absolute 100% dyed-in-the-wool races out there.
Yep.
Period. Period.
Yeah, there are.
So let me ask you this question, Milt Thompson, author of The Only One in the Room, who's thought about this a lot.
Yep.
Educator, superintendent of schools. Is American grammar racist? I'll tell you why I ask. Because this is out of the University of Washington in Tacoma. We must ever be vigilant, they say, against racism because it is everywhere. Now it comes to light, are you ready for this, ladies and gentlemen, that even grammar is racist. And I'm quoting here, an anti-racist poster in a college writing center insists that American grammar is racist and an unjust language structure promising to prioritize rhetoric over grammatical correctness. The poster was written by the director, staff, and the tutors at the University of Washington and Tacoma's Writing Center. It states, racism is the normal condition of things, declaring that it permeates rules, systems, expectations in courses, school, and society. linguistic and writing research has shown clearly for many decades there is no inherent standard of English. There's no inherent standard of English, Milt. This is what the Writer Center statement says. So we don't have to use good grammar anymore. Or use grammar well.
And what I believe is this is like the return to Ebonics Part 2, in that the people who say this, the people who back this, who purvey this, if they had to choose a university to send their kids to, they would never send their children to a university that would allow them to be slipshod as far as grammar or public speaking or proper English, however that would be perceived, because they know it would limit their opportunities in life.
All right. Earlier you said that the proponents of the, not the civil rights legislation, but the poverty legislation, the anti-poverty legislation so-called by LBJ, was well-intentioned. Is this well-intentioned?
This is stupid.
But is it well-intentioned?
No. And let me clarify.
I don't think it is either. I'll explain my thing, but I want to hear what you have to say.
I don't think it's well-intentioned from this perspective. I don't think it's well-intentioned because the effect upon the person that they're trying to help should be evident to them. If you live in a society, as we do, where we value proper speech, you know, outside of texting and, you know, other shortcuts that we use with social media, then you have to know that if you desire for someone who you believe is oppressed to have all the opportunities that they can, you would want them to have the best English, the best speech, the best skills.
Every opportunity, every advantage to allow them to get ahead. Now, I think it's subconscious, but I think it is really wrongheaded. I think subconsciously, now follow me on this, ladies and gentlemen. It's subconsciously trying to keep a significant segment of our society down, because if the African American community and the Hispanic American community ever was elevated to the level where white America is, all these people, their jobs all go away.
True.
This anti-racist, it's an industry, and people make their livings keeping people divided and not trying to lift people up. I believe the Democratic Party, at least subconsciously, and I think it was conscious too, decided to co-opt the African-American community by saying, you know what, we will just be the party to say we will give you stuff because you have been downtrodden, versus trying to inspire them individually and therefore corporately, one person at a time, one man, one woman, one child at a time, and say, you can do this. You can pull yourself up. You can make it. All you have to depend on is yourself. And now we have an entire class for generations now of dependency.
Yeah, that's true. I have no argument against that. In my book, I talk about that, because it is distressing that I believe that what's happened is, anytime that you preach complete dependency to people, what you end up doing is you end up harming them. You limit their opportunities. There's a certain amount of self-determination that's necessary in order for people to succeed. And when you were talking about the Great Society programs before, even if they were well-intentioned, they violated a lot of principles of self-determination and hard work that cause people to succeed. No, having been a school superintendent as well as an administrator, I've run schools where I've watched kids who are in intergenerational poverty, and I've watched how they think that getting new shoes and other things is magic, because they never see an adult leave the house to go to work to produce something, which is different than my experience growing up, because I saw my father come back from Bell City covered in soot and could make the connection between his hard work and new clothes, food on the table, a new car. So the work ethic, I saw the connection with that, whereas if I had grown up in a home where there was total dependency, it would have seemed like, ooh, we got a new TV. It's magic. I found out it's not magic. Dad worked 80 hours, and that translated to the new TV.
See, I have a good friend of mine, a good acquaintance, who's a African-American Muslim. A good guy, sharp guy. And his son is in college, and he asked me if I knew anybody to be able to direct him towards a summer internship. Mm-hmm. And I said I'd be happy to help. I never met the young man. And I talked to him on the phone, and now he's a college student. He sent me his letter of reference, or his letter of experience. Mm-hmm. On the telephone, completely unimpressive.
Mm-hmm.
Very quiet, sounded kind of like your typical urban black kid, if I can use that terminology. And I felt bad for him because I knew that the guy or the gal that he would be interviewing with did not know that his dad was sharp and that this kid probably was sharp too. So I took his letter and I edited it for him. He was very thankful. And he said, obviously, this is a lot better than I could do. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm happy to help. But here's the problem with having the grammar police, if you will, saying that grammar is racist. Whether it be a white or an Hispanic or an Asian or a Native person or a person of color of any kind, African-American, if they're running a business or they're running an organization, chances are that they're not going to understand that grammar is racist. And they are going to judge that young man or young woman based on their ability to communicate even in 2017. And they are doing a disservice to the young people in the African-American or the Hispanic community or anybody who says, you know what, proper grammar is racism.
Well, that's true. Plus, factor in, as I tell my sons all the time, it's people my age and slightly younger who run everything. So it doesn't matter that people in their 30s or 20s, you know, don't use proper grammar. When you sit down with me, because I've interviewed people, I've hired people, boy, if you're not spot on as far as your grammar, if you're not articulate, I don't really want to finish the interview. I will as a courtesy, but I just won't. I'm impressed by people that are intelligent. Think of this. I thought if I stopped being a superintendent, my second business would be to work with pro athletes, because it used to be an embarrassment to me that they would interview certain African-American athletes who were superstars who could not speak. Michael Jordan, unfortunately, was one of them who was not articulate. And for many of them, it cost them millions upon millions of dollars because you couldn't use them for endorsements. Now, then I'd watch athletes like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Junior Bridgman, or Tiger Woods get interviewed. And then you'd watch people that were articulate and, you know, and doors opened for them because of proper grammar, being able to speak, and realizing that in different settings you use different modes of communication. That it'd be all right for a kid to talk slang and all of that with their friends, but they've got to become almost bilingual in that they've got to have the, you know, BS kind of proper English so that when they sit down in an interview. But then white kids do the same thing, only sometimes with them it's how they dress for an interview.
Right. Well, I'll tell you something. You got to know your audience. And you have to, on purpose, make a decision that you are going to communicate in a way that puts your best face forward, that puts your best foot forward, so that you can succeed.
Your radio friend is on AM 1400 WRJN Racine, FM 98.1 Kenosha, and FM 99.9 Racine.
As always, our thanks to Milt Thompson. He's the author of the book, The Only One in the Room. Get it today. WRJN continues to cover this sometimes troubled and racist world.
Obliterate ISIS. Mexico says no. I'm Michael Toscano.
Now you finally have a president. Finally.
President Trump addressing conservative activists in Washington, pledging that in a matter of days.